real life. So artificial intelligence and AI-based tools have been making waves across the whole software development industries. It is changing the way people build and ship applications. But a lot of people are still wondering how enterprises and even high-tech startups are tackling this innovative new technology, how they are adopting AI tooling in their dev processes, and most importantly, how is the quality engineering roles getting redefined due to artificial intelligence? Now, today, we're going to find out all about this in our session with Abhilash. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lambda Test XP Series. Through XP Series, we bring to you the latest innovations and industry best practices in the field of quality engineering and software development as a whole. Our aim is to connect with industry experts, business leaders in the ecosystem, and learn from them. I'm your host, Madit. I'm head of growth and marketing at Lambda Test, and it's a pleasure to have all of you with us today. And joining me today is, as a guest of the show, is Abhilash. Abhilash is the Vice President and Head of Technology at Quality Kiosk. He has more than a decade of experience in software quality engineering space. And right now, he's working with digital-first companies, specifically in integrating AI-augmented testing in their processes with the aim to enhance product resilience, improve user satisfaction, and build up software development pipelines, accelerate software development pipelines. Now, in this XP Series, today's session, we'll learn from Abhinash how big organizations and startups alike are adopting these emerging new technologies, specifically across enhancing productivities, optimizing cost, and improving operational efficiencies. So Abhilash, first of all, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for taking the time out and joining us today. I did get a chance to tell a little bit about yourself, but it would be great if you can introduce yourself to our audience.
Awesome. Thanks, Mudit. I'm excited. Thanks for this opportunity. And it's a nice way to connect with the community, especially, I know Lambda Test having a huge connectivity and the community coming together to contribute to quality engineering and a lot of the AI stuff happening. So that's exciting. But yeah, so thanks to you and your team. Let me probably spend a little bit of time boasting about myself. I'm Abhilash. I head the technology and digital native vertical for QK. So QK is a 23-year-old organization focusing on reliability engineering, leveraging AI. Our idea is to be looking at areas where we can plug in AI in different SDLC processes, and not just limiting to that, but just going beyond left and also very right in the life cycle of product engineering and product development. I come with a lot of experience having worked with a lot of unicorns of India and companies that will sort of now an example of how we build great products. And it's been a pleasure there having worked there. Now I'm looking to sort of leverage my experience in AI to enable a lot more companies in the coming days across the globe. I'm looking forward.
Awesome. So let's talk about AI, right? So everybody have been using some kind of AI-based tooling, for example, ChatGPT, one of the most popular ones. Yeah. But let's talk about the using of artificial intelligence-based technology, specifically in the engineering lifecycle. How the modern product development looking like using the in the AI era, and why is it in fact important for enterprises to at least, if not using, to start thinking about using AI?
Yes, I think AI has become accessible to a lot of people, and that makes it easier for us to adopt in a lot of different ways, including enterprises. But I want to step back a little bit and say, what is AI in terms of what or how we should look at AI, right? Mm-hmm. For me, AI is more of a knowledge graph. I would say AI is further away from getting matured in a lot of ways. But for us, how are we going to break the silos of a lot of teams in a company or a product engineering lifecycle? So let's imagine we have the development team, the quality engineering team, and then you have the ops team, and then you have the support team, and a lot of other teams coming in together. But everybody uses their own tools, and everybody uses or comes up with their own KPIs and metrics and the way they collect data and utilize data. And for me, where is AI going to help is when we try to leverage all of this and build a bridge between all these different teams to gather data and make sense out of it, right? And that's what we call it knowledge graph, right? That's what is going around in the OpenAI and other LLMs to build knowledge graphs of the data. And that's where enterprise is going to leverage a lot of these techniques to be utilized and use their data very specifically and train their data, which is, I mean, make sure it's secure in a lot of other ways, but then make it enterprise ready, right? So what we are saying here is basically knowledge graphs which are customized to specific enterprises. And where we are going to, you know, make a leap is, imagine you are a tester, and the only way you are testing right now is that you have PRDs, and then you write your test ideas or test cases, and then you start testing it, and then you push it out. But then you end up, I mean, we see a lot of leaks in the production, and then customers complaining about things going wrong, and you know, the customer experience sort of comes down. We are always looking at ways to improve customer experience. One of the examples that we have been recently exploring is how can we leverage customer behavior data to do testing, right? So the way we are looking at is, if we are able to understand how customers are utilizing the product or things that are breaking in the journey of having to utilize the product, we could do better testing, right?
Yeah.
So, and how it enables us to is to bring in observability and a lot of other aspects. But the overall idea is, how can we utilize this data lake that is being generated and then leverage it for testing? And we could do much better testing is what I believe, because we become extremely powerful, because you have the very left data, and then you have the very right data, and then you're putting them together and then coming up with test strategies. That's going to change the way you potentially test the product and potentially the way you see the products, right? And that's where I feel knowledge graph is very powerful, and how it is going to drive us in the future, right? But yeah, I mean, the potential is tremendous and unlimited is what I see at this point of time.
So that's a pretty interesting proposition here. Like we have been talking about AI, and people have been talking mainly about Gen AI, like how to use generative AI technologies like OpenAI, ChatGPT, and all of this. But the thing that you talked about is something that AI has been helping out since 2016, since the IBM Watson days, right? Like cognitive AI, finding out right key insights from large set of data. So imagine a product that has millions of users, millions of people using the product. We always talk about user stories when we start our quality assurance processes, and it's always a predictive thing in nature. That means somebody goes back to a drawing board, assumes that these could be the user stories, and then create test cases and test scenarios. Yeah. But if you look at it the other way around, as you mentioned, like actual user stories and then build up test cases from that, that would be a game changer, right? And usually it's a challenge because there is so many user stories in a company's website view or app views. So finding out right user stories, categorizing them, building up test cases through them, that's a pretty something that AI can definitely help out. And another very important point that you highlighted was around observability, like which is a very big point for enterprises right now. That is, we have a large set of data, either in the form of user stories, clicks, views, events, and like thousands of different metrics that is usually there as graphs in Grafana or Datadog or these kind of dashboards. But how to make sense out of it? That is something that AI can definitely help out. So in your industry experience, like, is this something that people have started to adopt, use, finding out those kind of insights from this huge set of data? How is it going about? Like, is it the adoption is great, or people are still going towards it?
Yeah, I think I would say that the adoption is picking up, because we are right now at a very conjecture stage of having AI as part of our product engineering lifecycle and also customer behavior analysis overall. Mm-hmm. But what we are looking at is the maturity is still low in a lot of ways because, I mean, that's one of the parts that we will eventually talk about. But the idea is that if you have the data sanity and data structure and your data quality significantly better, then you do a lot more, leveraging the data, you do better product engineering and quality engineering overall. Mm-hmm. But observability is these days a quick plug and play at this point of time because you just have too many tools out there. You have open source tools. All you need to do is if you can manage your data lakes better, and then you will be able to drive insights out of it. But the next step of that is AI ops, right? Mm-hmm. The first step is the observability, and the next step is AI ops. If you put a maturity curve to it, people are in the very early stage of adopting observability. I think many have already started integrating observability as part of their product. But then how do you utilize the data and drive a lot of things is something that we are seeing. People are still figuring out because it's very contextual in nature. Every company have different architecture, different views around how they build their systems. So it's always contextual. But then, yes, there is a lot of emphasis. We see a lot of momentum in adopting observability and also transitioning towards AI ops and using real user monitoring to drive incident management and a lot of other things. So yes, I would say that we are in a growth stage of observability. We have crossed the seed stage or the early stage of adopting observability overall.
But to be fair, observability is one thing, but when you talk about coming back to the AI part, like people are still steps behind. People are still figuring out, like OpenAI and AI-based technologies has been around for 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Some kind of technologies even before that, but it's still not widespread. It's still not have a very widespread adoption, specifically in the enterprise setting. So what is holding these companies back? Why is it still so hard to adopt technology like this, even though when we know that there are practical use cases that it can solve?
Yeah, so there are two different kinds of companies, right? One, which are very, if you split this world into two different parts, one is the pure play financial services, banking domains who are driving everything. And then you have the digital and the technology companies. We are much more open to adopting because they themselves utilize a lot of AI-based products, right? The biggest concern for a lot of companies is how the data gets used or trained on. So are you going to use the data, train a gen AI or I would say a general AI components, or are you going to use it specifically for your customers? And then your data sets become really limited, right? Even for a big company, like OpenAI is trained on huge amount of parameters and data points. But if you put the same thing in an enterprises, because it becomes very limited because the data set is too small for anything to be trained on, then the accuracy sort of comes down drastically. So that's why we see a huge, black and white in and yang, right, overall. That's because of how much data is enough and how big of a data is enough for a training AI, right? And that's where we are looking at MLOps, for example, right? How do we start moving towards MLOps so that, you start driving your training and a lot of data-centric work to be done around AI. So I believe right now there are no restrictions because there are a lot of companies who also offer on-prem or private cloud instances in a lot of ways. It is also to do with the way people want to implement, because most of the time you don't have that practices around, you don't have a framework around implementation. So you don't know how to go about it. Most of the time, people sell you licenses and products, but then they don't sell services around it to be able to enable it for you. So So you need usually thought leadership around how do you drive implementation for enterprises. So I think we are halfway there. We are still cracking a lot of things on how do we train with smaller set of data, or how do we use certain techniques from a wide range of data and, you know, use it for enterprise, just the semantic search part of it and stuff like that. But yeah, my opinion would be that it's the practices around it. It's not the tool itself or the product itself. So we'll have to build a lot more practices as a quality engineering practices, and more companies have to start contributing towards it to be able to make it easier for a lot of customers to adopt and utilize them right away.
Awesome. So let's fine tune the conversation to quality engineering right now, right? So we have seen that, yeah, there is still a challenge in adopting AI-based technologies, but as a company who wants to start off in this journey, what do you feel are the low-hanging fruits, the quickest ways that people can start using AI, specifically in the quality engineering field? So what use cases we should focus on that can at least get us started in adopting AI technologies?
Yeah, I think there are two use cases that we can start immediately for, especially the quality engineering side of it, is to be able to utilize the data that you have to build a Copilot, for example, right? Because most of the places that we have seen is the developers are usually are looking at dashboards and, you know, Slack channels and a lot of other places. And one of the places that we have experimented with one of the customers is that, you know, how about giving them a chatbot for them to understand what we are doing instead of they talking to us, right? We try to build that conversation around, I put all my the QA documents and knowledge base into a knowledge graph, and then expose a Copilot to a wide range of people to understand, you know, hey, you know, where are we on the sprint? How many bugs are we identifying in this particular module? How long it's going to take for us to do something? So, and then you avoid a lot of calls that would potentially happen and improve the overall efficiency of how people consume quality engineering teams as well, right? So that's a very big use case that I see, because that does not require you to do a lot of modifications and asking your, you know, development teams and other teams to, you know, make these changes in the product. You do this, we need this access to this, all of that sort of gets out of the equation, and just focus on just knowledge-based copilots, right? How can you build a knowledge copilot for your set of data that you have written? And this you can use, using a lot of tools. One of the tools that we are using is DevRev, where we put in all the knowledge base and data inside DevRev and create a copilot that gets exposed to our customers. They can ask natural questions, right? So instead of they asking us. So, and that has actually, to a lot of extent, reduced the way people interact with us, and the discussions becomes extremely focused and efficient overall. The second part of it is where we are talking about the observability piece, right? Because I think if you are able to stitch both the backend and the frontend observability to be able to drive your testing and insights, right, around it. So those insights are for the quality engineering team to consume and drive their test strategies, instead of they, trying to debug the incidents that has happened. So these are two primary uses where you don't have a lot of dependency except you getting an access and trying to get some basic approvals for some of the tools that you can get hands-on with. So it makes your life easier and build a lot of efficiencies. Your confidence around how you test the product becomes extremely, the bar just keeps growing very well. That's something that we have seen closely happening. And this is something that we've experimented with a few customers. So it seems like it's working. So I hope it works for others as well. So people should let us know if it works.
So for a company that is planning to adopt these technologies, I'm sure they would come across a lot of challenges issues in the future, and but based on your experience, like what are the things they should be very precautious about, like what are the precautions they should take before diving headfirst into these technologies? For example, you have been talking about data, and so there's a lot of data is required to train your models and everything, but the data quality becomes a challenge as well, right? So what do you feel are the things people should be worried about before adopting these technologies, or maybe you can say prepare before adopting these technologies?
Fortunately, I was talking to someone just before this podcast, and we are talking about data quality and the readiness for you to get into it. And one of the conversations that came up is because our customer have been changing their architecture and the way they store the data, the way they utilize the data, their services, a lot of things over the last 10 years. And if you try to build a mapping around it, it's just too complex because you've been jumping versions from Java, whatever, to what Java it is today. And then you have a database which is, you know, from relational to something else. And then things have just changed too drastically over the last 10 years, I would say, or the 5 years, I would say. But I think that's the biggest, I would say, shortcomings, right? Because of the fact that you don't have a good picture of your system growth and transition over the last few years. So I would say that one of the activity that even as testers should do is to be able to sit with the teams and try to, you know, draft a nice service mapping around how things have changed, what has happened over the years, you know, what's the future changes that's going to look like, and then build a readiness around it, right? Because if you try to plug in something today, there are 90% chances that it's not going to give you any results, because you will see a data that's not mature, data that's not accurate. But if you can try to learn what has happened over the years and the transition that has happened over the years, then your life becomes easier on what you do from today. I'm not talking about the past, but how can you start structuring your data, structuring your practices, your processes around enabling data for themselves, right? So those are the one, I mean, important parts, and that's where we are helping a lot of customers by first helping them picture what has happened over the years for themselves, because they themselves are, whoa, did we do all of this? Oh, did we do all of this? I don't know. We are not aware of it. Yeah, welcome to product engineering. This is how it looks like. But the thing is that, yes, if we can help them visualize this particular piece, is going to be extremely valuable and helpful, and give them certain suggestions on how do you start building, like how we have quality engineering, we should call it AI engineering. How do you enable yourselves to adopt AI technologies over the next years to come, and in a significantly better way, and also enable yourselves to map yourselves to what is happening in the AI journey, and in a lot of sense, right? So those are, I mean, this is specifically an important piece of discussion we should do, and that's what I believe. And what was the other question? I completely forgot the follow-up question of this.
So let's switch a little bit. Let's switch the gears a little bit. We have been talking about companies, enterprises, how the organization as a general should think about AI. But let's talk about people. Let's talk about the testers, as you mentioned. So people have been talking about moving from quality assurance to quality engineering mindsets. So this is something that has been happening, and again, is still, I'll say, a thing that is maturing. But how the role of a quality engineer is enhanced, or let's say redefined, in the, because of AI technologies. And if you are in this field, if you are, let's say, starting off in quality engineering fields, what are the, again, readiness as a person that you should have so that you can grow in this field?
Yeah, I think our testers as a role has changed drastically over the years, especially AI coming in. And it's it's good for a lot of reasons, right? Because it's just going to help us do a lot more things much more efficiently. But I would say that one of the things that we as testers should not change, I would talk about things that we should not change is, I used to tell my people that you have to leverage AI to be 50% efficient in your work, but you'll have to be extremely creative for the rest of the 50%. So the creativity should remain the same for many testers, and we should continue to keep the bar up, because it's just going to get even more difficult as we continue to progress, because most of the things are going to be autonomous. I would not call it automation. It's going to be autonomous in a lot of ways. See, with cloud, you can create an application within a few seconds. So you don't particularly need an engineering expertise to do that. But with enterprise, it's a very different thinking, thought process, and how the data gets populated and stuff like that. But testers should continue to think more from customer experience perspective and be as creative as possible. That is one thing that we should not change, because that's what is going to keep us, I would say, being creative means we can break the system, right? And we can still question the value of the product. And on the other side, what we should also be doing is start thinking instrumentation. I think people should move towards building quality management systems, right, or quality visibility overall, because we have been too dependent on a lot of tools that just builds very bad dashboards, and which talks about these are my number of test cases and this is what the passes and fails are. That's not going to help, definitely. But we'll have to build a lot more visibility around certain metrics that are going to move and impact the customer experience and also the product engineering experience. Because let's say, for example, developer productivity, can you build a dashboard around DORA metrics? Or we look at, do we have something like that for even quality? Do we have, can we build a version of it to understand our efficiency and our capability of what we can do with it? And also move towards observability and AI ops. I think observability right now is a bare minimum for every tester who should come with, because they should, if they are able to read data points from the customer and they're able to make changes in their test strategies, it's going to significantly improve the way they are going to test and see the product from a different perspective. And they should be able to build small utilities around it. I think it's time for us to build a lot more automations. Like if you remember IFTT, right, which is like sort of combines a lot of tools and builds, you know, insights and actions around it. So testers should start doing that. We should build utilities. We should build small automation. We should not think about, you know, automation as basically Selenium and Cypress. We are talking about automation being an enabler in a lot of places where you shouldn't be existing. And then and then make your process efficient rather than your automation efficient, right? So we should be very technically sound. We should understand data. We should understand customer, because it's a very nice conjunction that is happening right now, because we used to be very far off from the technical aspect of it, because testers are usually asked to think customer centricity. But it's time that we break that and then go both ways in the spectrum and build a lot more value. I mean, I should say that we are like the drivers, right? And you have passengers, you're the drivers, but you also need a map, right? So you need the maps to know where we are going. So we should be the maps. I mean, you don't have to be a driver, but you should be maps. So that's how we should enable ourselves. The testers should definitely move towards building utilities, being a lot more technical centric and build apps and products. They should be able to utilize observability overall. I think they should also be able to implement observability rather than it being a developer KPI. It should be a quality engineering KPI, not anymore. And then start moving towards AI ops and other things. So that's where we should be spending our time on.
So the role will transition from right now, which is very automation centric. Like the quality engineering teams are required to create a lot of automations, but tooling, for example, Lambda, Scania, I can help you bridge that gap, create automation fast. Now the role will transition to a more scientific nature, as you said, read data points, read user stories, and build up quality assurance matrices, like quality matrices. Yeah. Like these are the standards that we have to define, and to measure those standards, we need a right observability in places. So just creating automation or just creating the tooling around automation frameworks, that won't be the sufficient. You have to move beyond that, be more quality oriented, customer oriented, and kind of a scientific in nature, right? So that's pretty awesome insights. So last thing, we are kind of on time. So last advice for the both software assurance teams, quality assurance teams, and the people behind it, what they should upskill. So we have talked about AI, specifically observability and tooling. What about GenAI? Like, what are the tools and technologies you think the people should upskill in to become, let's say, ready for the future?
Well, I don't want to advise anybody, because advice has always been a, because you might have to, you should have done a lot more to advise, because imagine it's like, you know, the, it's like generation, right? So the previous generation did not have access to mobile, and the next generation had only access to, the next generation is talking about AI. So it's always, there is a gap between what sort of advices that you would give sort of applies to them. But in this case, I think people should be able to use techniques and use GenAI, like, for example, OpenAI, you know, GPT and others. If you are able to do prompt engineering really well, you will be able to come up with really good output of what you're going to utilize that for. I see that people don't, we've been training people in prompt engineering because that's one of the core pieces that we want our testers to be really good at. Because that one of the example that I would give is one of our customers wanting to build wanted to test the user permission system, right? You know, you have different users and roles and responsibilities and all of that. So the combination was coming up to 1200 to 1300 combinations. You can't sit and write test ideas for 1300 combinations. So there are places where you can utilize GPT immediately. So the team came up, it was supposed to be a 2 weeks task, and the team used GPT to do it in the next 5 minutes. And then they created a nice Excel and then presented it to the customer. So they were like, wow, this is a great use case for leveraging AI. So, and prompt engineering is a must. I think people should learn deep prompt engineering, try to customize it. And if you are able to consume the output as quickly as possible, it's a great plus point. So prompt engineering is number one. So everybody should learn prompt engineering immediately. And then how do you leverage a lot of open source tools to build utilities? You don't have to start from scratch. I think there are a lot of people have under the misconception that I need to have a lot of knowledge and do this. You have AI. You're open source. Can you imagine marrying these two? Because you don't have to do a lot of things, because people are contributing to a lot of open source communities projects. And a lot of small, tiny utilities we have used just significantly impacted our customer way of looking at quality. So how do we start doing that? So I have a dedicated team whose job is to uncover good open source projects and take the techniques out of it and put it into GenAI and drive, give testers a way to test certain things which are too complex for them to understand or not able to utilize, right? So these two, I think, immediate skills. So there is no question on that. So imagine if you're able to do good prompt engineering and you're able to utilize that on open source utilities, then you're able to do great job. Another part of it is to be able to, I think the data quality part of it is still a majority piece. People can learn data quality, understanding data, and interpreting data it's going to significantly improve the way they talk to customers. I mean, I'm not talking about testing per se. It's about how much customers are going to open up to you, and then how much can they offer, how much insights can they offer, and so on. So I think, yes, data quality is a big topic, but I think prompt engineering and utilities are very accessible to us these days, and we should start doing it.
Awesome. So now we have hit the time. Unfortunately, it was a really great discussion, Abhilash. Thanks for taking the time out, sharing insights on how AI is changing the quality engineering space. And for all the people who have joined us today, listen to this podcast. Thanks you for listening in, and feel free to add in your comments below. We'll be happy to hear about you, what you thought about our insights, and do subscribe to Experience Series. Again, Abhilash, thanks for taking the time out. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Mudit. And it was a pleasure talking to you. And I hope we do a lot more such activity. And thanks, everyone, for joining this podcast. And see you soon.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Happy testing.